You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me as always is...
Mac Lacey. Alex, we are just about 2.5 weeks out from the Book of Boba Fett. And today we are doing something really special, kind of to continue our anticipation of the show coming out and everything. We are doing Boba Fett 101. So basically all that this episode is going to be about is Boba Fett's life from, you know, beginning to end, or, well, you know, beginning to the Book of Boba Fett, at least. And we're just going to be talking, you know, everything that's happened to the character so far, how he's grown, and how it's going to tie into the show.
Just, I cannot wait to do this. We did this before when we were formerly the Mandalorian Watch, when we were just covering the Mandalorian and doing scene-by-scene breakdowns in our voicemail hotlines. But we decided after season two of the Mandalorian and the announcement of all the live-action shows coming out, we decided to change our name to Children of the Watch to better cover the upcoming live-action television shows. So, back when we were just the Mandalorian Watch, we had a Mandalorian History 101. And so if you are a longtime listener, you know that's kind of like, okay, you're going to get everything in this episode. And that's our goal, is to catch you up on everything about Boba Fett from his birth all the way to the Book of Boba Fett. So this is like your primer for the Book of Boba Fett. If you're not as familiar with that character, or maybe you've got friends and family members who need to get caught up on everything that's happened to Boba Fett, this episode's for them, because we want to make this accessible for all Star Wars fans, whether you're new or a hardcore fan. So that's what our goal is for today. And so get ready to take some notes, and class is about to begin, because this is going to be a lot of fun. Now, I will say, originally, we had recorded a version of this that just at the end of it, when we were finished recording, it just did not feel like us. It didn't feel true to who we were. So this was originally going to come out like earlier, like last week, basically. But when we were editing it, it just did not feel like us. So we're re-recording it because we want you guys to get the best quality episode possible. So,
right.
Sorry for the delay, but...
Yeah, we know that where Alex and I's strength lies in kind of conversational discussions, you know, just the back and forth, you know, letting ideas, you know, toss around, everything like that. So we want to do it in a, you know, we're going to change up the format a little bit from what we were trying to do, but I think it'll be fun. Yeah. For sure. I guess it's worth mentioning, we've got a Patreon if you want to support us. And then we've also got keepthewatch.com where you can get some sweet merch.
Some sweet merch.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter and all that.
Cool.
But with that out of the way, I think we're ready to go.
All right. So let's jump in. Here we go. The beginning of Boba Fett. I don't think you can really talk about Boba Fett without talking about his father first. Right? Jango Fett is really where we have to start. If we're starting with Boba Fett's history, we have to start with Jango Fett's history. And there's some things that we know about Jango Fett's history, and then there's some gaps in his history that we still don't know about. But in the most recent season of The Mandalorian, seems to confirm a lot of things about what we used to know about Jango Fett, according to the Legends timeline.
Right.
Might be true. So just to keep everyone on the same page here, when Disney purchased Star Wars, pretty much every book and comic before the purchase is now considered legend. So they could be true, they might not be true. But what we know from The Mandalorian Season 2 is that Jango Fett was a foundling, number one. His mentor was Jaster Meryl, number two, and he fought in the Mandalorian Civil Wars, okay? That seems to line up with the Legends version of Jango Fett's history, where he was a foundling from Concord Dawn, and he was adopted into the culture by Jaster Meryl, and he fought in the Mandalorian Civil Wars, which were between the True Mandalorians and Death Watch. Now, whether that is the actual story or not, we're not sure. But in the chain code, it did say those things. It didn't say anything about True Mandalorians, and it did not say anything about Death Watch. but that's the version of it in the Legends timeline.
Right.
So that's kind of Jango Fett's origins, his history there. And I think it kind of makes sense why Boba Fett stopped to help Din and Grogu, because that reminds him of his father, right?
Right. He would know what the system of foundlings and everything that Mandalorian culture seems to have in place. Like, he knows what that means. And he knows that, like, the bond that Jango and Jaster would have had, which I'm sure, like, Jango is going to tell stories of him, you know, to Boba, as long as they have a okay relationship, you know. Like, I'm sure he's, you know, gonna know that bond and, like, know that that's what Din and Grogu have. So when he meets Din and Grogu in The Mandalorian, it helps fill in that gap a little bit, why this character we normally kind of know is sort of, you know, relentless and that kind of thing, would go out of his way to help these strangers, you know?
Yeah, and, like, from even some of the TV spots that we see, it kind of seems like we're gonna be getting some flashbacks of Boba Fett from when we see him in the first episode of season 2 of The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. and until we see him again in that 6th episode of The Mandalorian season 2. What was he doing between those two times? We're going to get that story filled in. And it seems like from the TV spots, this guy's on a mission, right? Like, he is trying to do something. So what would make him stop and help Din and Grogu? Well, it's because it reminds him of where his father came from. If it weren't for the way that the Mandalorians do the foundling system, there would be no Jango Fett. There would be no Boba Fett. So I'm sure that played a role into, okay, I've got a mission, but I'm going to stop my mission to help this guy and his child out.
Right. For sure. And I think that's cool. Like, I like that they've built that into something that makes sense. It's a consistent kind of idea, you know, in the galaxy. So
yeah. And so Jango Fett, we don't know at what point he broke away from the Mandalorians to become a legendary bounty hunter in his own right, but he did. So, like, Jango Fett, in the time of the prequels, is a legendary bounty hunter. People know who he is. He's basically the top bounty hunter. The only one that would rival him in this time period is a guy named Cad Bane.
Yeah. You might know him from the Clone Wars. He's a Duros. He's got a really cool hat and rocket boots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'll pop up in the story later.
He will pop up in the story. So, like we said, Jango came from a foundling origin. He went on to become a legendary bounty hunter in his own right. The only one that could rival him is a guy named Cad Bane, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, Jango Fett, we all know him from Attack of the Clones. We know how he came to be the clone template is really through manipulation of Darth Tyrannus, right? So, like, even in Attack of the Clones, he mentions Tyrannus. He is recruited on the moon of Bogdan by a man named Tyrannus.
Right.
So,
and that's Count Dooku. Yes. That's his Sith name. There's some murkiness with all the details of kind of the commissioning of the clone army and stuff, and Sifo Dyas, and there's still some stuff that's a little murky in the Star Wars canon as far as that goes. You know, Count Dooku is involved in some way.
I guess because Jango was so legendary in this time period that when Palpatine and Count Dooku were working out the plan for the Clone Wars, they needed somebody with, okay, like, who's going to be the clone army? Like, who's our template for the clone army? And they choose this guy.
Right. Basically, just because he's the baddest dude around. They just want the most competent soldiers they can make.
Do you think him being a Mandalorian has anything to do with that?
I definitely don't think that hurts. I mean, like, Mandalorians have kind of a reputation in the galaxy. I don't know what all I mean, like, training and stuff like that doesn't apply to genetics, but, like, they probably, I mean, didn't Django help train the army? Like, they probably had him in place just thinking they could kind of a one-stop shop. They've got the genetics, they've got the training and the experience, you know. Makes sense.
Right. So, yeah, Jango Fett is corrupted by Darth Tyranus, or that's Count Dooku's Sith persona. By the way, like, I wish they would use the name Darth Tyranus more than Count Dooku.
Yeah. It's cool. I love it. I love that it's, like, Tyranus is evocative of, like, political stuff. Like, you know, the root word there is kind of tyrant and stuff like that. Like, all the Sith words are just English word that means bad in some way, and then you just tweak it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Sidious is just insidious.
Right.
Darth Vader is Dark Father in Dutch or something like that.
And Maul. I mean,
Maul. It's just, yeah. But I like also, too, that they, like, have kind of their individualized Maul. He's, like, a warrior, so it makes sense for him.
Right.
Count Dooku is, like, a statesman. He's a politician. So Tyranus, perfect.
Perfect. So, yeah, Jango, here's the thing. Jango did not know who Tyranus was. I don't think Jango knew this guy's a Sith Lord. Do you?
No, I think he saw that this guy's a person with deep pockets, I think is all that Tyranus is to Jango.
Yeah, and so he gets paid 20 million credits, but he has one request when they are going to make this clone army. He wants an unaltered clone just for himself. And that's the clone he would raise to be his son, Boba. And Jango ends up staying on Kamino to help train the accelerated clones, because clones have an accelerated lifespan. So they age much quicker than normal people do. And Boba doesn't, right? He's an unaltered clone. So he's
on
just
the same timeline as you and I. No, you know, enhancements genetically or anything like that. Just a copy and paste of Jango.
Yeah. And so he raises him to be his son. And from all indications, he's a really good dad, because, like, Boba adores his dad. And that's something that we talked about in our very in-depth breakdown of Attack of the Clones, which you can go back and listen to as well. We did an in-depth breakdown of Attack of the Clones, kind of in fun preparation for the Book of Boba Fett way back in the summertime. So that's fun to listen to. But yeah, so he raises him. Boba adores everything about Jango. But we also learned recently in the new animated series, The Bad Batch, that Boba was originally going to be called Alpha, at least by the Kaminoans.
Right. I don't think, you know, Jango knew anything about any of that. I think they were kind of doing it, you know, under the table, out of his view.
Yeah, and the Kaminoans created another seemingly unaltered female clone of Jango, and she is known as Omega. We'll talk about her a little bit later, but we did want to mention that technically it seems like Boba Fett has a sister. Whether he knows about her or not, we're not clear yet.
Right. Also, Omega seems to be an enhanced clone. She seems to be part of the Bad Batch. They're all enhanced, like you know, Cameron Owens went in and gave them special abilities and stuff like that. That has implications for Boba as well.
Right.
You know, that it's possible that there's something we'll learn that the Cameron Owens did. You know, who knows?
Yeah, we're just not clear on that part of the timeline just yet, but I'm sure those gaps will eventually be filled in.
That story is still, it's just in the process of being told. So
yeah.
Watch so the like, Bad Batch.
Like we said, Boba kind of like grows up looking at his dad as a hero, and he wants to be just like his father. And then just before the outbreak of the Clone Wars, and we're starting to get into Attack of the Clones here, where we first meet Jango Fett, he's contracted to kill Padme Amidala, and then Jango contracts Zam Wessel to carry out the hit. So it's like a double, it's layer type thing.
It's like 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon, but with a assassination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zam Wessel is an interesting character too, because if you look at Jango and Zam and then compare that to Boba and Fennec, there's a lot of similarities.
Even just in the costuming, right?
Right.
Like there's some similar design motifs between Zam and Fennec. So
it's interesting, except it doesn't seem like Django treats Zam as loyal as it seems that Boba might treat Fennec, right?
Right. I'm interested to see what their dynamic shakes out to really be, like kind of what the root of their relationship is, you know? Because right now we just know that they're working together. We have no idea about, you know, what the motivations of either of them are. Right. So I'm really excited to get to explore that aspect of their dynamic and then see if any of that ties back into kind of, you know, the things Boba would have seen with his father working with Zam, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's just something that I think going into the show, we all kind of need to have in the back of our mind a little bit, that relationship aspect of the Fetts and how they actually relate to people. Because in Attack of the Clones, we see that after Zam Wessel's caught and she crashes in the cityscape of Coruscant, she's about to give up Jango Fett's name, and he offs her.
Right. So, you know, it was her or him, and he chose him. So, you know, cutthroat, and that does not seem to be the kind of person that Boba is, like, post-Sarlacc, you know?
Right.
Like, there's more, we don't know. We really haven't seen much, just what we've gotten from The Mandalorian. But it's a different kind of Boba. Like, I have a hard time seeing that Boba doing a move like that, like what Jango did. So I know I talk about this all the time. I can't wait to see just like what the internal conflicts of Boba are, like what the changes are, what happened to him that he's so markedly different, you know?
Right. And I think we're going to see that based on one of the latest TV spots. I think we're going to see directly post Sarlacc and, why he decides to change his attitude. I think you're right. There is a difference in Boba pre and post Sarlacc. We talked about on the Mandalorian breakdowns that it seems like Boba almost had some sort of religious experience in the Sarlacc.
Like Jonah from, Jonah and the Whale.
He started to realize some things about his life. So everything started to change for the Fett family when Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi visited Kamino to investigate claims of the clone army, and we get the confrontation between Jango, Boba, and Obi-Wan, and you can feel the tension between Jango and Obi-Wan and Boba in that scene when they're talking. Also, I would like to point out that it seems like Jango has taught Boba Mandalorian because they speak to each other and communicate to each other in a different language, in Mandoa. And to tell him to like basically hide his Mandalorian armor that's just sitting in the closet right there at the washroom. And also interesting, like when Obi-Wan goes to confront outside on Kamino, that Boba is in the pilot seat and just straight up tries to murder Obi-Wan Kenobi right there.
Yes.
As a 10-year-old.
Boba has been working with Jango. Yeah. And like Boba at this point has already seen a lot. And probably done a lot. Like you were saying earlier, like Jango's a really good father in one regard.
Yeah, not like a good father, like maybe.
Right.
More like he's a good father to Boba. Like he loves Boba. That's what I mean.
He loves Boba for sure. I don't know that he's the best father because he is
true.
Like this 10-year-old is jumping in a starfighter to murder someone with no second thoughts. Like,
yeah,
he's not a great father.
and maybe I don't know. This is an interesting thought. Does that stem from anything of like Mandalorians kind of almost inherently distrusting and hating Jedi? Does that have anything to do with it? Is that something that maybe Boba was pushed towards because he just doesn't like Jedi? Or
right.
Maybe he's just, you know, a violent kid who needs
help. Who knows? Maybe we'll get some more of Jango and Boba's story one day.
Yeah. And so after a dramatic showdown and a chase through the asteroid belt where we get the coolest seismic charge sound in the world.
It's, yeah, just the brief moment of silence before the Inception trailer plays.
It's so good. Basically, they're followed all the way to Geonosis, where the first battle of the Clone Wars will take place, and Obi-Wan ends up getting captured, and you've all seen Attack the Clones, hopefully. If not, definitely watch it, especially in preparation for this show. But Jango Fett is with the Separatist army, and that's another thing, another layer of all this that's really weird. An interesting dynamic, because Jango is the template for the clone army, but he's on the Separatist side.
Right. He, like, seems to be on retainer with Dooku somehow. Like, why else would he be here?
Right.
In the arena, you know?
Yeah. So, like, they all gather around in an arena, and again, I think we need to mention in this scene, Boba is, like, really pumped to see these Jedi and Senator mauled alive by animals. He's kind of excited by it. So that kind of gives you a little bit of an indication of Boba Fett, right?
Yeah. It definitely gives you a snapshot into the world he is brought into, right? This is the first thing he knows is kind of, you know, the underworld violence. But then he also knows, you know, the love of his father. So,
yep. And we know from the movie, and in that scene, Jango sees an opportunity to take out one of the leading council members in Mace Windu. And I'm sure, based on what we know of Jango, he kind of saw that as an opportunity. I can further cement my legend if I take this guy out.
I took out Mace Windu? Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a legendary forever bounty hunter after that, right? Like,
yeah, because Mace is, like, considered the best warrior of the Jedi.
Right.
I mean, he's hands down the best. Like, I would say people even consider him better than Yoda. Maybe not like a sword fighter or something, but like Mace isn't afraid to like get a little dark on you just to like to take you out. Like, right? He kind of skirts the line of the dark side a little bit in his fighting style. He's like,
yeah,
he's pretty,
it's form seven.
He's pretty intense.
It's either pronounced Vapad or Vapad, but
yeah, I say Vapad.
Vapod, something like that.
Yeah. But that's more legend stuff, but like we can carry that over into the canon. We all know what happens. The jetpack incident happens. Jetpack theory has never let us down.
Yeah.
And his jetpack gets destroyed by that charging rhino. And that's like he cannot back away from Mace Windu in time. And he gets decapitated right there in front of his son.
Yeah. It's, I mean, for sure, that's devastating, right? It's really the only person in the galaxy that Boba has a close relationship with, seemingly. Like, I mean, don't you think it's pretty much just Boba and Jango around?
Yes.
Like, they're pretty much the only two people they talk to.
You know? Absolutely.
Unless you've got Aunt Zam around or whatever, but, and so they have to, you know, to watch, him being taken away from you in real time. That's just, that does something to a person. For sure.
And one of the iconic images from Attack of the Clones is that young Boba, and you can see it on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. You can see young Boba holding the helmet of his father and looking down into it as there's just like death and destruction all around him. Kind of just a haunting image and kind of a foretelling of what his life will be like, right? Like this is the legacy of Jango Fett, and this is going to be Boba Fett's legacy as well. And we don't know exactly how Boba got off of Geonosis. I think we can assume, though, based on what we know from the Clone Wars, is that he took Slave One and he left Geonosis, and he probably went to the people that his dad knew, right?
Yeah.
Like, the people that his dad knew, it's like, I can't go back to, you know, Kamino, because that's the clone army. They're with the Republic. My dad was with the Separatist. I can't go back there. So he probably found himself in some sort of either, okay, I've got contacts on Slave One that I can reach out to, or like some watering hole. But eventually he made his way into the hands of Ara Singh. And she is a bounty hunter. And you kind of see her actually in The Phantom Menace the first time.
She's watching the pod racers go by from, or something like that, from a vantage point, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly it. And so he makes his way with Ara Singh, and he's actually going to be with other bounty hunters like Bosk. They come up with a plan. Boba wants revenge right away. And so in the Clone Wars, and this is part of the stuff, like if you haven't watched the Clone Wars, this is where you're going to get your info right now. In the Clone Wars, we actually see Boba Fett team up with Ara Singh, Bosk, and a Clatoian bounty hunter named Castus. Now, it's interesting. I don't know if there's a connection here. We saw some Clatoians in the Book of Boba Fett trailer.
Right.
That's something to just keep in the back of your mind. Okay.
Yeah. You never know.
It's something to keep in the back of your mind. So he finds himself with these people, and under the direction of Ara Singh, Boba Fett carries out a plan of revenge against the man who killed his father, Mace Windu. So he actually disguises himself as a clone cadet named Lucky, and Boba infiltrates the Republic cruiser named Endurance. And that's a ship that Mace Windu and Anakin Skywalker were on. And in this little episode arc, we see Boba basically plant a bomb inside of Windu's quarters, and it would be set off by an infrared tripwire. And that's pretty dark. Like, that's a 10-year or 11-year-old at this point. That's pretty dark.
Right. And this is like the first thing he's doing after Attack of the Clones, you know? You can see young Boba fitting in with all of his genetic.
Yeah, if you're watching on the YouTube, we've got an image of Boba with other clones around the same age as him infiltrating. And so, yeah, pretty dark stuff. It doesn't go as planned. The bomb does not go off on Mace Windu, but instead a clone trooper, which I do want to say, like, how weird was it for Boba during the Clone Wars to see his dad's face everywhere?
Everywhere. I mean, how weird is it for him to look in the mirror and see his dad's face? Like, exactly, you know? there's a lot there that I don't know we'll ever be delved super deep into.
Right.
The psychology of cloning in the Star Wars galaxy.
It would do some stuff to you. So, like we said, things don't go as planned. Windu doesn't die, but they kind of know now, like, oh, someone's here sabotaging. Yeah. And he gets a call from Ara Singh to disrupt the ship's reactor core. But we do see Boba struggle with this directive. Like, he does not want to kill everyone. He just wants one person, and that's Mace Windu, because he killed his dad. He doesn't want to kill all the clones and everybody else on that ship. So he struggles with this. So I think, to me, we do see that, okay, Jango instilled a code of honor in Boba Fett. There is something there that he's not a totally bad person.
Even if he's, like, not moral in the sense that you and I are moral, you know, there is a morality to his actions of some kind. Or there's guiding principles to them, at least.
Absolutely. And so, pressured to act, Boba carries out the directive, and he destroys the reactor, and the ship is destroyed, and it crashes, and Boba's actually, he manages to escape on an escape pod with other clone cadets, and he's picked up by Ara Singh and the others piloting Slave One, and then they actually go down there. The team of bounty hunters go down and pursue Mace Windu in the wreckage on Vancor, where they hope to set another trap for Mace Windu by using Jango Fett's helmet as a bomb. And whether this is truly Jango's helmet is something that perhaps should be debated, because Boba wears the same helmet now.
Right.
So maybe,
like, unexploded.
It's weird. Or, like, Beskar stronger than what we thought. Or I think it just, we can maybe count it up of, like, it was made to look like Jango's helmet, and it wasn't actually Jango's helmet. That's what I'm thinking in my head.
that whatever we got to do to sleep at night, you know.
Listen, I can't sleep at night knowing like there's a continuity error in Star Wars. There's no.
I got bad news for you, buddy.
That's funny. Once the team realized, okay, they basically set that bomb down. Mace Windu picks it up, but they are able to get the blast away from them, and they survive that too, but they're kind of trapped, and R2-D2 is bringing more Jedi in to kind of support the survivors. Once they realize that support is coming to help Mace Windu and Skywalker, they decided to take the other survivors from the Endurance as hostages. And during this, once again, Ara Singh requests Boba to do something that he's not comfortable with at all. And in an attempt to lure the Jedi, Ara demands that Boba executes one of the officers live on a holo transmission. And he does not do that this time. He refused this time, and his relationship with the other bounty hunters really begins to crumble right there, right? Like, he just cannot do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a perceived moment of weakness on the bounty hunter's part, right? And you can just really see what a terrible influence Ara is on Boba after, like, there could not have been a worse person for him to link up with after Jango's passing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Bosk seems almost kind of like an uncle type, like Uncle Bosk, right? Like,
protective in a way, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, almost laissez-faire a little bit with him, but, like, there is, like, a bit of a protection thing going on with Bosk and him. And Castus doesn't really care either way about Boba. But there seems to be a better relationship between Bosk and Boba than what we originally thought from Empire Strikes Back and stuff.
Right.
So, seeking refuge on Florum, because they got to get away from here, Boba meets Hondo Ohnaka.
Oh, I love Hondo. Hondo's one of the best characters.
He really is.
He's a weak way pirate who's just will never die. He's just...
Yeah, we know he survives at least until the sequel trilogy because he's at Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, he is an animatronic in the Smuggler's Run queue.
Yeah. So Hondo is one of the best. So Hondo reveals that he was once friends with Jango Fett. Now, whether this is true or not remains to be seen. Hondo does not help them, but promises not to get in their way. So basically, he's kind of ambivalent to it. Like, I'm not going to get in your way, but I'm not going to help you either. However, Castus betrays the group and leads the Jedi directly to Florum, where all the bounty hunters are with the hostages. And Castus is immediately executed by Singh as a horrified Boba watches on. And as the Jedi pursued them, Singh left Boba behind to be captured. She just straight up leaves him, does not care about him, does not help him. He feels betrayed by this. And he's taken in. And it was there that he's questioned by Plo Koon, who is Dave Filoni's favorite Jedi character of all time. And basically Plo urges him to tell him where the hostages were because it's the honorable thing to do. So that makes me question, like, did Jango have some sort of thing that the galaxy kind of knows, like Jango had an honor code?
Yeah. I mean, Jango certainly has a reputation of some kind. He's known, I think, like, Boba later kind of becomes known as the most ruthless and, like, the most brutal bounty hunter in the galaxy. I don't think Jango ever had that particular reputation, you know?
No.
I think it's more of, like, he's just legendary in, like, what he's accomplished.
And maybe there's a thing of, like, bounty hunters and honor too, you know, so right. That might be part of it too. So Boba is taken into captivity basically by the Republic, and along with Bosk, Boba was imprisoned on Coruscant, and we don't see him again until his imprisonment that one of the silliest Star Wars, the Clone Wars arcs of all time, in my opinion. Basically, Obi-Wan Kenobi goes into...
It's incredible.
Undercover work. And he changes his face, he shaves his head, and he's pretending to be like this bounty hunter, and he goes into prison, and that's the next time we see Boba in the Clone Wars. And in prison, though, a 12-year-old Boba Fett has seemed to made it, like, he's made a name for himself in prison. Like, people are, like, kind of coming to him in the criminal underworld in this prison, almost, like, under him, right? Like, Boba, right, as a 12-year-old, is in charge in this Coruscant prison.
Yeah. He's certainly hardened a little bit, I think. He is kind of coming into his own as a criminal talent. an operative in the underworld. You know, he's been on his own for a couple years now. He's gathered some experience. He's had some bad experiences and learned from them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's starting to be able to maneuver stuff into, you know, working for his advantage.
One thing that we did see in that episode of the Clone Wars where we see Boba in prison, there was one person who did not defer to him, and that was the bounty hunter Cad Bane, the Duros, right, bounty hunter. A rival, also potential mentor figure to Boba. We'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yep.
But that is something to keep in mind, that they have a history together. Okay. Yep. Because I think that could come into play in the Book of Boba Fett.
In a big way, potentially. Yep. Cad Bane is a character that who has showed back up recently.
Yes.
So.
So eventually, somehow, Boba made his way out of imprisonment. Maybe the Republic realized, we have a 12-year-old in incarceration with full-blown adults. Maybe that's a bad idea.
And the 12-year-old is running a cartel.
Right. So let's let him go. And he actually formed his own bounty hunter syndicate when he was let go. And he named it Krayt's Claw and actually used Tatooine as his base of operations.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of a big deal for the Book of Boba Fett.
Right. I mean, it explains why there's such a tie to Tatooine, outside of just Jabba being located there, right? Because at this point, you know, he's on his own. Jabba has nothing to do with it yet, you know? Tatooine is just kind of an underworld capital, you know? I think Coruscant's number one. Like, if Coruscant is New York, like, Tatooine is L.A., when crime is concerned, not necessarily in population size or anything like that, but
yeah. It's interesting. Like, I, you know, in doing the research for this, I, of course, I've seen these episodes of the Clone Wars, but it's just something that kind of did not click with me of like, oh, he's operating off of Tatooine. He calls his syndicate the Krayt's Claw. So, like, in terms of the Book of Boba Fett, whatever he's trying to do, maybe it's something that he's already established before in the past, and he's like building it back up again.
Right. That's something that I think that right there is the kind of thing that like is why we do a rerun, yes, through the history of the character and everything, is because like just adding that context, getting that back in our minds, you know, I think is fun for being able to speculate about the show.
Absolutely. And if you're watching on the YouTube, again, I'm not going to describe this picture on the podcast because that's bad podcasting, but we see in the Clone Wars, Boba Fett is wearing a different armor set, and it looks like he's carrying his dad's like two blaster pistols, but he's got a different armor set on. Kind of reminds me of Bosk a little bit, or not Bosk. What is the guy that Leia took his armor in Return of the Jedi?
It's either Boosh or Bausch.
Boosh, that's it.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like that.
Yeah.
A little bit to me. But he's wearing his own armor, and we see in the Clone Wars, we actually get to see one of his missions, right? And it's actually one of my favorite episodes of the Clone Wars. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's season 4, episode 15, episode 20, Bounty. That's what that one's called. So if you want to watch it, it's pretty good.
Everybody loves a train heist.
Yeah, it's basically a train heist. And the members of Krait's Claw include Bossk, so they're all involved in this episode. Bossk, Dengar,
yeah,
C-21 Highsinger, which is a really cool droid, Lot Razi, and for a brief time, the Sith acolyte Asajj Ventress, which was like Count Dooku's apprentice.
Yes. I actually think Asajj would have been one of the better people Boba could have been connected with early on. Like, if she had been in the place of Aura, I think Boba would have gotten off on a lot better foot.
Yes.
Like, obviously, none of these are, like, good people to have as your mentor, you know, but I'm saying, like, if we're picking a, member of the underworld to mentor Boba, I think Asajj would have been way better for him than Aura.
Yeah, because we see later in the Clone Wars, Asajj start to make a turn towards the light. Again,
yeah.
Not morally light in the sense of like you and me and everybody listening, but she's starting to become more of a bounty hunter than Sith, right?
Right. She's realizing maybe there's more to life than just like steeping yourself in hate, you know?
Right, right. So in that season 4 episode bounty, we see Krait's Claw take on a mission that serves as yet another learning experience for the young bounty hunter. And it doesn't go well for Boba, but you can see him progressing, right? Yeah. Like, he is learning those lessons, and he's learning them the hard way. And we also know from the Dark Disciple book, which takes place during the Clone Wars, Boba later decides to help Ventress infiltrate Count Dooku's castle on Sereno. It's another failed mission for Boba and his team, where they're defeated by Dooku's forces. And, like, that's really how I would sum up Boba Fett's time during the Clone Wars. It's just a lot of hard lessons and mentors, right? Like, he comes into contact with a lot of mentors that kind of form and shape his mindset and his view, but he's also learning a lot of hard lessons really early in life.
Right. Yeah. And, those things, like, all the lessons he's learning, both hard lessons and, you know, the confidence he's gaining as he comes into his own, both of those things have an impact later on him in life, I think. You know, like, yeah, you can see how his formative years kind of determine the rest of the way. Yeah,
and he's not quite the Boba Fett that we all know. And I like that he's wearing a different armor, because he's not Boba Fett technically yet, right? Like, that's his name, but he hasn't earned that name and the reputation that comes along with the name yet.
Right.
And so as we kind of move out of the Clone Wars, there are two things that I feel like we need to talk about in terms of the kind of, I would say these are the lost chapters of Boba Fett's life. We don't know a lot about Boba Fett's life immediately after the Clone Wars.
Right. Yeah. A lot of the stuff, the information we do have is from, like, projects that never came about, or, there's an episode of the Clone Wars that was never put out or anything like that that we get from, you know, stuff from. But a lot of it has to do with Cad Bane, who we, you know, mentioned was going to come up later. Basically, Cad Bane, I think, sort of stepped into Phil Jango's spot. I think he kind of took up, you know, the as the premier bounty hunter in the galaxy. He steps in, and he's an interesting character to me, because he's more business than most bounty hunters. Like, he seriously doesn't seem to take a lot too personally to me. He seems to be a little bit more just about whatever's going to work out for him best in completing the job, you know?
Right.
He's a Clint Eastwood analog, basically.
Yeah. Where we're coming from with this is, there was a Clone Wars arc that was supposed to be made, but they did not make it.
Yeah.
It's an unused story arc from the Clone Wars that shows us Cad Bane taking Boba Fett under his wing and, like, becoming his final, and that's in air quotes, final mentor, per se, right?
Right.
And so in this unused arc, Cad Bane teams up with Boba to help rescue a child on Tatooine. Again, that Tatooine connection,
right,
I think, is very important. This child has been taken from a band of roaming Tusken Raiders. That's interesting, too, because we see Tusken Raiders in a lot of the TV spots and trailers from the Book of Boba Fett. So whether this arc actually happened or not is kind of something to keep in the back of your mind. Like,
right. We're whether assuming we might just get this same story in a different medium. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, so either it happened or we're going to get this same exact story in the Book of Boba Fett.
Right. I think either of... It's safe to say that this is pretty much part of the Boba Fett story, you know?
Right, yeah, either way.
Yeah.
So in this arc, it would be revealed that Cad Bane and Jango knew one another and considered each other's, like, rival. They're like frenemies, almost.
Right.
And seeing something in Boba, Cad Bane began training Boba in the ways of bounty hunting to see if Boba could live up to the legacy of his father, Jango Fett. And in this arc, Boba obtains his father's armor and begins to make it his own. And at some point, there would have been a falling out between Cad and Boba, ending in a standoff duel between the two bounty hunters. So if you're watching on the YouTube, you can kind of see some of the pictures from that unused arc. You can see Boba in his traditional armor that he has, in the paint scheme that he normally has it. And there would have been a duel between the two, between Cad Bane and Boba Fett, and they end up firing at the same exact time, and Boba lands a shot on Cad, and Cad lands a shot on Boba, and it actually hits that part of the helmet at the top that has a huge dent in it, and that's where the dent came from in the armor. And you can see that again on the YouTube if you're watching online.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's we bring this up for a reason. Cad Bane came back in the Bad Batch. You know, so they've oftentimes I feel like they try to get characters back into kind of our public consciousness in other ways before they bring them in. Like, for instance, we got season 7 of The Clone Wars, and then we got season 2 of The Mandalorian. So, like, Ahsoka was kind of fresh on our mind again going into that. My timeline is correct on that, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And so, like,
That a lot with Rebels, too.
Rebels a ton, yeah. Thrawn came up in Rebels, and now Thrawn is mentioned in The Mandalorian, you know? So Cad Bane just came up in The Bad Batch. And The Bad Batch seems to be very related to Boba in a lot of ways, with the Kaminoan connection, the cloning connection. So that's just like a very pointed thing that makes me think we might be seeing Cad Bane in live action
Absolutely.
December, you know?
Yeah, I do think we'll see Cad Bane in live action. Whether or not we see Omega, who, like we talked about before, is considered a genetic sister to Boba Fett, remains to be seen. Earlier, I thought we would see Omega. I thought it was very likely, but as we get closer and closer to the show, I do not think we're going to see Omega at all.
I don't either. I think there's just too much to do in the show so far, and we just don't have enough of Omega's story for her to make an impact here at this time, I don't think.
Right. And so, yeah, the time period after the Clone Wars and until we see him again really in A New Hope in the special edition part, we don't really know what's going on with Boba Fett, but we do know some things. We know that he makes a name for himself. We know that he has his armor now at this point, after the Clone Wars ends, after Revenge of the Sith, all that.
Yeah.
And he starts to make a name for himself. This is where Boba Fett becomes Boba Fett.
Right.
His time period.
Yeah, he has established himself as a legend, as a myth, almost kind of this like force of nature that like, you don't want to be working a job that he's also working. Like, that's bad news, you know?
I would say, also, he probably gains a reputation for disintegrations.
Yeah, just based on Vader in Empire, for sure. I think some people got disintegrated. One of the next bits of information we have comes from, like, the main Star Wars line from Marvel. And I just thought it was an interesting detail. He actually was hired by Vader to track down the fighter pilot that blew up the Death Star. So yeah. Vader didn't know who it was at this time. But Boba obviously didn't capture Luke, but learned his name. and brought the name Skywalker back to Vader. And so Boba was actually the first person to kind of concretely inform Vader that he had a son. I just thought that was an interesting little tidbit to throw in there.
Yeah, that's a cool connection.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be super important for anything Book of Boba Fett related or anything like that.
Here's what I want to do. Because, like, we're in kind of a gray area. Why do you think Boba Fett works for Jabba the Hutt? Like it seems like in the criminal underworld, right, Jabba is king at this point, right? Like, Jabba is definitely the king, and Boba Fett is, like, his hired right-hand man, is the vibe I get.
Right. So, I mean, as early as, like, in New Hope and the special editions now, Boba is just showing up with Jabba to, like, confront Han, right? So he's basically doing, like,
shakedowns.
He's trusted, but he's doing grunt work, you know?
He's
like in collections and stuff. Like, so, like, obviously he works closely with Jabba. He's trusted. He has a very strong reputation, but he's not given any kind of responsibilities of any sort of leadership or anything like that. Whereas we see, it looks like he has aspirations for that as early as the Krayt's Claw stuff. Jabba had something on him, right?
Okay, yes.
He has to.
Yes, thank you. That's what I was hoping you would go to in your thought process there, because it almost make me feel like Jabba was holding something over Boba's head, right?
Yes.
Like, maybe Boba had tried to take over, and we just don't know that story yet. Maybe he had tried to make a move, and he failed.
Right, and then, so now he's kind of paying his penance or whatever. Yeah. There's some kind of, it makes sense that, like, when you're trying to be the biggest bounty hunter, you work for the biggest crime lord, which I think is Jabba in both physical size and scale of operations. And so, like, that makes sense, but I feel like Boba would be Bib Fortuna at a point, right?
Mm.
Or you know, he would be occupying a space like that. Not saying he's going to be like a...
He definitely hates Bib.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it'd be a very different... He's not going to be holding court and stuff like Bib. But, like,
I hope not.
You know.
Yeah.
But there's got to be something there that Jabba has something on him, or there was a, failed coup, something like that. Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say we'll get information on that in the Book of Boba Fett, because in the trailers, he's already talking about, like, this is the way Jabba ruled. I'm going to rule differently because that didn't work out for me so well. Or, it's kind of the subtext there.
There's definitely something there. And whether we get that story in the Book of Boba Fett or if we one day get, like, a solo sequel type thing, I think that's ripe for... There's a lot of stories that could happen there. Like, originally when... Like, we were hearing about what Disney was planning when they first bought Star Wars. There was going to be a Boba Fett movie.
Right.
And the original plans, this is crazy. The original plans for that movie is you would have the Solo movie, and at one point you would see Boba Fett doing something in that movie, right? And then the Boba Fett movie would come out, and you would see the other side of that from Boba's perspective.
Right. There was also talk of that one being, like, first person through the helmet visor. There was all kinds of stuff going around about that movie.
Yeah. That was the Josh Trank project, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very decidedly canned after the Fantastic Four came out. What happened there. Basically the portion of Boba's story that's next is the portion that we're the most familiar with. It's Empire. It's his involvement. He's working for Jabba. Basically Vader kind of hires this big host of bounty hunters that Boba's a part of. And, like, I guess the reason that he gets invited to this, because this isn't really through Jabba or anything, it doesn't seem like. It seems like the Empire is just putting out a job posting, right?
Right.
So he probably gets invited to this because he's already worked for Vader and he's trusted and everything like that. But to your point earlier, Vader's like, no disintegrations, so something happened. Yeah, and he basically, you know, he tracks down Han Solo. He's the only one that's able to do it out of all the bounty hunters. There's this comic... Do you have something you're going to say before we get into War about the Bounty Hunters?
Well, I was going to say, with the Han Solo and Boba Fett thing, there seems to still be some sort of unspoken history between those two people. Like, Han knows of Boba very well.
Yes, even outside of Empire.
Yeah.
In Jedi, some, like, Han's like, there's a Boba Fett? Where's, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's something going on there that they have a history, or yeah, just Han knows he's after him or something like that.
I love to imagine that they've had several run-ins and they have like this love-hate relationship almost.
I don't know, man. To me, I think having Boba after you is probably like being hunted by ring wraiths. I think it's just terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think Han is who Han is, so he like plays it off. But
sure.
I think they have a, like, I think he's genuinely scared of Boba Fett.
Oh yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, okay, you're about to talk about the most recent comic storyline called War of the Bounty Hunters.
Yes. So basically, in between the time, I don't need to recap Empire for everybody.
No.
You can watch it. It's my favorite Star Wars movie. Go watch it. if somehow you haven't seen it and you're watching or you're listening to the podcast, I'm super happy for you because you're about to get to watch an incredible experience. But anyway, basically in between the time that he picks up Han from the carbonite freezing chamber to the time he actually delivers Han to Jabba's palace, turns out there was this whole thing we didn't know about that basically Jabba at one point. So Boba is headed back and Han starts like unthawing a little bit and Boba's like, we can't have that. So he stops in at his doctor friend who can fix the carbonite problem, but it's going to cost all this money. So Boba has to like enter this pit fighting tournament all painted black so nobody recognizes him and everything. And then there's a lot that happens, but Han gets stolen from Boba, and every bounty hunter that you've ever heard of fights Boba in this arc.
I will say there are two important things that we need to take from this arc.
Yeah, the biggest one doesn't have much to do with Boba himself, but it's, I think, will play into the Book of Boba Fett, and that's the return of Crimson Dawn and Kira.
Yes.
So that happens in the War of the Bounty Hunters. Turns out, Kira has kind of resurrected Crimson Dawn.
Remind people who Kira and Crimson Dawn are real quick in case they don't remember.
Yeah, for sure. So from Solo, Kira mm-hmm. is played by Emilia Clarke
mm-hmm.
and kind of Han's love interest, but they are, it's kind of a star-crossed lovers type thing. She basically, to survive, has to throw in with a criminal syndicate called Crimson Dawn, and then it's run by Drayden Voss, who's played by Paul Bettany, and he's wonderful. He's one of my favorite Star Wars villains, actually.
He is really good.
But yeah,
so
and then
back.
Yeah, it's Darth Maul was leading it somehow. But now he's not, because Kira is now at the top of Crimson Dawn as it resurfaces, and it like went away for a while. It was a big shock that they were back, kind of thing. And I think that because that happened in this arc, and we're talking about a bunch of criminal syndicates and stuff in the Book of Boba Fett, I feel fairly certain that we will see some Crimson Dawn representation.
Maybe not necessarily we see Kira in the Book of Boba Fett.
No.
But maybe we see Crimson Dawn again.
Right. We see, a messenger comes and delivers a message or something from Crimson.
Maybe,
you know, so, or
maybe those guys in red are Crimson Dawn.
Yeah. So Crimson Dawn has always had a black and gold color scheme,
true,
which is weird. They don't actually wear red.
That's true.
Unless
but maybe she decides to change that because it
yeah,
just doesn't
knows?
Make sense.
You know, who knows? And just laying my cards on the table, haven't actually read War of the Bounty Hunters, so I do not know the visual art.
Listen, here's the thing.
Back in.
Somewhere along the lines, I feel like Star Wars comics in the modern era lost me.
Yeah, there are some absolute gems here and there.
The Rise of Kylo Ren.
Vader's fan. I like a lot of Aphra.
Charles Soule and Kevin Scott, definitely worth reading. If their names are on that,
yeah,
worth picking up. The other ones, not for me. because I think what's happening for me with the comics is like a lot of superhero comic writers are writing Star Wars like a superhero genre.
Yeah.
And that's just not for me.
Makes sense.
But that happened. I mean, it's considered canon. And just recently, they also name drop Prince Xizor.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, he could show up in the Book of Boba Fett as well because they're name dropping him at a very particular time right now. So it makes me wonder, like, because Prince Xizor is from the Legends stuff. He's from Shadows of the Empire. And he is in charge of a criminal syndicate called the Black Sun.
Right.
So you got Crimson Dawn, Black Sun. So maybe this is a person who can show up in the Book of Boba Fett, but that's also a name to keep in the back of your head.
Yeah, for sure. I think another big takeaway from the War of the Bounty Hunters is that Jabba at one point had a bounty on Boba. Like, so there, I think that's just furthering, they've been at odds more than like just watching the movies would lead you to believe, you know? So I think, you know, there's a precedent for conflict between the two parties.
For sure. And then the last time we see him in the original trilogy
is Return of the Jedi, and is where he meets his original unfortunate end. The jetpack theory holds true. Han stabbed him accidentally.
he whacks it with a stick, and he basically, Boba crashes into the side of the sail barge and
into the Sarlacc pit, where he begins digesting for presumably 1,000 years. And then the next thing that we know, he pops up in The Mandalorian, season 1, episode 6.
Six
is the prison.
The gunslinger. Yep, with Toro Calican. It's a great episode.
with a lot of things, but he's at the end of that. He's the shadowy figure, finds Fennec. So, and
we'll see
from that. You can watch our recaps if you want to figure out Boba's, what happened to him in the season 2 of The Mandalorian. But you can watch our recaps on that if you need to get caught up. But other than that, that brings us pretty much up to speed. Boba is out of the Sarlacc pit. He helped Din and Grogu. He's got his armor back. And now whatever he's really going to start on, he's starting on.
Right. And like we've speculated before in the past, if you've listened to the podcast a lot, is that we think that Tusken Raiders had something to do with Boba Fett maybe getting rescued by the Sarlacc. And the fact that he's got a gaffy stick kind of confirms that.
Yeah.
What we've seen from the new TV spot, it kind of looks like to me that I think Boba might even go to Tashi Station
and pick up a power converter.
Well, we see him in Tashi Station. This is Tashi Station. We see him in there, and it kind of looks like the undersuit of what he used to have the armor on and top of it is like all burnt and
like
stuff.
Like the flight suit, but it's kind of chewed up a little bit, yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's the crazy thing. The people he was, it looks like there's like gangsters like beating some people up in Tashi Station. It looks like Fixer and Cammy from the uncut A New Hope stuff, which is pretty interesting. That's a deep cut, but that's pretty cool. We talk about that in the breakdown on the Patreon and stuff. But
do you think Tusken Raiders ever eat Sarlaccs? What if they like have like a community wide like operation to like hunt a Sarlacc every like however often, and then they hunt this one, bring it out of the ground, cut its belly open, and Boba slides out?
Maybe because I guess it all depends. Like, is a Sarlacc stationary or can it move around?
That's a good question.
We don't actually know. Like, it kind of looks like it's stationary. Like, it cannot move anywhere. It just, like, stuck right there. But, I mean, there could be a connection to the season two premiere of The Mandalorian, where they talk about that crate dragon took up a home in a former, like, that used to be a Sarlacc's home.
Yeah.
And the crate dragon lives there now. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be the same Sarlacc.
Could be.
Could be. We don't know, but we will know soon when the Book of Boba Fett premieres. So we hope that you guys enjoyed this show. This kind of wraps up our history of Boba Fett, and we hope that you took some good notes and you learned a lot about Boba Fett and enjoyed this conversation, because we're looking forward to the Book of Boba Fett, and we want you guys to join us every week. When the Book of Boba Fett comes out, you can expect an episode every Wednesday as we do a scene-by-scene breakdown of the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And we go into the nitty-gritty details, and we break everything down, and then we have a voicemail hotline episode in between those. Yep. And we would love for you guys to go ahead and call into the voicemail hotline and just tell us, what are some of your thoughts and theories? What are some of the things that you're looking forward to the most about the Book of Boba Fett? Because we're going to do about one more episode that kind of gets us all finally prepped for the Book of Boba Fett. And we want to hear from you guys, so you guys can call in to the voicemail hotline.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to do kind of a big blowout, last final predictions, and you know, hearing your predictions and speculation, and just kind of a, you know, last stop before game time. So make sure to, you know, check into that.
So you can call, the number is 205-259-6675. It's been a while since we said that, about a year. So we'll memorize it again by the end of the Book of Boba Fett. We'll have that memorized. But 205-259-6675. Leave your voicemail for about under 3 minutes if you can manage that. And then if you mess up, just hang up, call again. We won't play the one that you messed up on. We won't embarrass you or anything, because we love to hear from you guys. Okay. So tell us what you're looking forward to, and we can't wait to hear it. And we'll prepare all together one last time before the Book of Boba Fett premieres. So I'm excited. We're here. It's game time.
For sure. All this talking, man, I gotta get my vocal cords back in shape for the show.
That's right.
But yeah, until that next, that kind of final episode before the Book of Boba Fett, keep the watch.